Chapter 24. Strongbox, and carried the plate and jewels about with him buttoned up, pondered over the card a little, then said, "Walk in." Apostrophe, it required some judgment to do it without butting the inner hall door open, and in the consequent mental confusion and physical darkness slipping down the kitchen stairs. The visitor, however, brought himself up safely on the doormat. Still the footman said walk in, apostrophe, so the visitor followed him. At the inner hall door, another bottle seemed to be presented and another stopper taken out. The second vial appeared to be filled with concentrated provisions and extract of zinc from the pantry. After a skirmish in the narrow passage, occasioned by the footman's opening the door of the dismal dining room with confidence, finding someone there with consternation, and backing on the visitor with disorder, the visitor was shut up, pending his announcement, in a close back parlor. There he had an opportunity of refreshing himself with both the bottles at once, looking out at a low blinding wall 3 feet off, and speculating on the number of barnacle families within the bills of mortality who lived in such hutches of their own free flunky choice. Mr. Barnacle would see him. Would he walk upstairs? He would, and he did. And in the drawing room, with his leg on a rest, he found Mr. Barnacle himself, the express image and presentment of how not to do it. Mr. Barnacle dated from a better time, when the country was not so parsimonious, and the circumlocution office was not so badgered. He wound and wound folds of white cravat round his neck, as he wound, and wound folds of tape and paper round the neck of the country. His wristbands and collar were oppressive. His voice and manner were oppressive. He had a large watch chain and bunch of seals, a coat buttoned up to inconvenience, a waistcoat buttoned up to inconvenience, an unwrinkled pair of trousers, a stiff pair of boots. He was altogether splendid, massive, overpowering, and impracticable. He seemed to have been sitting for his portrait to Sir Thomas Lawrence all the days of his life. Mr. Clennam? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Barnacle. Be seated. Apostrophe, Mr. Clennam became seated. You have called on me, I believe, apostrophe, said Mr. Barnacle, at the circumlocution apostrophe giving it the air of a word of about 25 syllables office. Apostrophe, I have taken that liberty. Apostrophe, Mr. Barnacle solemnly bent his head as who should say, I do not deny that it is a liberty. Proceed to take another liberty, and let me know your business. Apostrophe, allow me to observe that I have been for some years in China, am quite a stranger at home, and have no personal motive or interest in the inquiry I am about to make. Apostrophe, Mr. Barnacle tapped his fingers on the table, and, as if he were now sitting for his portrait to a new and strange artist, appeared to say to his visitor, if you will be good enough to take me with my present lofty expression, I shall feel obliged. Apostrophe, I have found a debtor in the Marshalsea prison of the name of Dorrit, who has been there many years. I wish to investigate his confused affairs so far as to ascertain whether it may not be possible, after this lapse of time, to ameliorate his unhappy condition. The name of Mr. Tite Barnacle has been mentioned to me as representing some highly influential interest among his creditors. Am I correctly informed? Apostrophe, it being one of the principles of the circumlocution office never, on any account whatever, to give a straightforward answer, Mr. Barnacle said, possibly. Apostrophe, on behalf of the Crown, may I ask, or as private individual? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the circumlocution department, sir, apostrophe, Mr. Barnacle replied, may have possibly recommended, possibly I cannot say that, some public claim against the insolvent estate of a firm, or co-partnership to which this person may have belonged, should be enforced. The question may have been, in the course of official business, referred to the circumlocution department for its consideration. The department may have either originated, or confirmed, a minute making that recommendation. Apostrophe, I assume this to be the case then. apostrophe the circumlocution department, apostrophe said Mr. Barnacle, is not responsible for any gentleman's assumptions. Apostrophe, may I inquire how I can obtain official information as to the real state of the case? Apostrophe, apostrophe, it is competent, apostrophe said Mr. Barnacle, to any member of the public, apostrophe mentioning that obscure body with reluctance, as his natural enemy, to memorialize the circumlocution department. Such formalities as are required to be observed in so doing, may be known on application to the proper branch of that department. Apostrophe, which is the proper branch? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I must refer you, apostrophe returned Mr. Barnacle, ringing the bell, to the department itself for a formal answer to that inquiry. Apostrophe, excuse my mentioning apostrophe, the department is accessible to the public, apostrophe Mr. Barnacle was always checked a little by that word of impertinent signification, if the public approaches it according to the official forms. If the public does not approach it according to the official forms, the public has itself to blame. Apostrophe, Mr. Barnacle made him a severe bow, as a wounded man of family, a wounded man of place, and a wounded man of a gentlemanly residence, all rolled into one. And he made Mr. Barnacle a bow, and was shut out into Mews Street by the flabby footman. Having got to this pass, he resolved as an exercise in perseverance to betake himself again to the circumlocution office, and try what satisfaction he could get there. So he went back to the circumlocution office, and once more sent up his card to Barnacle Jr. by a messenger who took it very ill indeed, that he should come back again, and who was eating mashed potatoes and gravy behind a partition by the hall fire. He was readmitted to the presence of Barnacle Jr., and found that young gentleman singeing his knees now, and gaping his weary way on to 4 o'clock. I say, look here. You stick to us in a devil of a manner, apostrophe said Barnacle Jr., looking over his shoulder. I want to know, apostrophe, look here. Upon my soul, you mustn't come into the place saying you want to know, you know, apostrophe remonstrated Barnacle Jr., turning about and putting up the eyeglass. I want to know, apostrophe said Arthur Clennam, who had made up his mind to persistence in one short form of words, the precise nature of the claim of the Crown against a prisoner for debt, named Dorrit. Apostrophe, I say. Look here. You really are going it at a great pace, you know. Egad, you haven't got an appointment, apostrophe said Barnacle Jr., as if the thing were growing serious. I want to know, apostrophe said Arthur, and repeated his case. Barnacle Jr. stared at him until his eyeglass fell out, and then put it in again, and stared at him until it fell out again. You have no right to come this sort of move, apostrophe he then observed with the greatest weakness. Look here. What do you mean? You told me you didn't know whether it was public business or not. Apostrophe, I have now ascertained that it is public business, apostrophe returned the suitor, and I want to know, and again repeated his monotonous inquiry. Its effect upon young Barnacle was to make him repeat in a defenseless way, look here. Upon my soul, you mustn't come into the place saying you want to know, you know. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the effect of that upon Arthur Clennam was to make him repeat his inquiry in exactly the same words and tone as before. The effect of that upon young Barnacle was to make him a wonderful spectacle of failure and helplessness. Well, I tell you what. Look here. You had better try the secretarial department, apostrophe he said at last, sidling to the bell and ringing it. Jenkinson, apostrophe to the mashed potatoes messenger, Mr. Wobbler, apostrophe apostrophe Arthur Clennam, who now felt that he had devoted himself to the storming of the circumlocution office, and must go through with it, accompanied the messenger to another floor of the building, where that functionary pointed out Mr. Wobbler's room. He entered that apartment, and found two gentlemen sitting face who faced a large and easy desk, one of whom was polishing a gun barrel on his pocket handkerchief, while the other was spreading marmalade on bread with a paper knife. "Mr. Wobbler?" inquired the suitor. Both gentlemen glanced at him, and seemed surprised at his assurance. "So he went," said the gentleman with the gun barrel, who was an extremely deliberate speaker, "down to his cousin's place, and took the dog with him by rail. Inestimable dog. Flew at the porter fellow, when he was put into the dog box, and flew at the guard, when he was taken out. He got half a dozen fellows into a barn, and a good supply of rats, and timed the dog. Finding the dog able to do it immensely, made the match, and heavily backed the dog. When the match came off, some devil of a fellow was bought over, sir, dog was made drunk, dog's master was cleaned out. Mr. Wobbler? Inquired the suitor. The gentleman who was spreading the marmalade returned, without looking up from that occupation, "What did he call the dog?" Called him lovely, said the other gentleman. Said the dog was the perfect picture of the old aunt from whom he had expectations. Found him particularly like her when hawkist. Mr. Wobbler? Said the suitor. Both gentlemen laughed for some time. The gentleman with the gun barrel, considering it, on inspection, in a satisfactory state, referred it to the other. Receiving confirmation of his views, he fitted it into its place in the case before him, and took out the stock and polished that, softly whistling. "Mr. Wobbler?" said the suitor. "What's the matter?" Then said Mr. Wobbler, with his mouth full. "I want to know," and Arthur Clennam again mechanically set forth what he wanted to know. "Can't inform you," observed Mr. Wobbler, apparently to his lunch. "Never heard of it. Nothing at all to do with it. Better try Mr. Clive, second door on the left in the next passage. Perhaps he will give me the same answer. Very likely. Don't know anything about it," said Mr. Wobbler. The suitor turned away, and had left the room, when the gentleman with the gun called out, "Mr. Hallo." He looked in again. "Shut the door after you. You're letting in a devil of a draft here." A few steps brought him to the second door on the left in the next passage. In that room he found three gentlemen. Number one doing nothing particular, number two doing nothing particular, number three doing nothing particular. They seemed, however, to be more directly concerned than the others had been in the effective execution of the great principle of the office, as there was an awful inner apartment with a double door, in which the circumlocution sages appeared to be assembled in council, and out of which there was an imposing coming of papers, and into which there was an imposing going of papers, almost constantly, wherein another gentleman, number four, was the active instrument. "I want to know," said Arthur Clennam, and again stated his case in the same barrel organ way. As number one referred him to number two, and as number two referred him to number three, he had occasion to state it three times, before they all referred him to number four, to whom he stated it again. Number four was a vivacious, well-looking, well-dressed, agreeable young fellow. He was a barnacle, but on the more sprightly side of the family, and he said in an easy way, "Oh, you had better not bother yourself about it, I think." Not bother myself about it? No. I recommend you not to bother yourself about it. This was such a new point of view, that Arthur Clennam found himself at a loss how to receive it. "You can if you like. I can give you plenty of forms to fill up. Lots of 'em here. You can have a dozen if you like. But you'll never go on with it," said number four. "Would it be such hopeless work? Excuse me, I am a stranger in England. I don't say it would be hopeless," returned number four, with a frank smile. I don't express an opinion about that. I only express an opinion about you. I don't think you'd go on with it. However, of course, you can do as you like. I suppose there was a failure in the performance of a contract, or something of that kind, was there? I really don't know. Well, that you can find out. Then you'll find out what department the contract was in, and then you'll find out all about it there. I beg your pardon. How shall I find out? Why, you'll ask till they tell you. Then you'll memorialize that department according to regular forms which you'll find out, for leave to memorialize this department. If you get it, which you may after a time, that memorial must be entered in that department, sent to be registered in this department, sent back to be signed by that department, sent back to be countersigned by this department, and then it will begin to be regularly before that department. You will find out when the business passes through each of these stages, by asking at both departments till they tell you. But surely this is not the way to do the business, Arthur Clennam could not help saying. This airy young barnacle was quite entertained by his simplicity in supposing for a moment that it was. This light in hand young barnacle knew perfectly that it was not. This touch and go young. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.